blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to our short-time stations will not be recognized as such, all stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at scarsvoip.com. That's spelled S-C-A-R-S-V-O-I-P. Your net control, I believe, actually this evening are several. My name is Kathleen. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I live in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where I believe it's a temperature of about 81 degrees, a little cooler today. And I'm merely just opening the program this evening. But prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. All right, hearing no emergency traffic, that's always a great thing. How about anyone celebrating a birthday, either last week, maybe tonight, or maybe this upcoming week, that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy birthday? All right, hearing nothing, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker and speakers. Let me advise you that if you've been part of this recording this evening, as we always record, you'll be part of the recording that is posted on our website very shortly thereafter, maybe the next day. So with that, once again, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. This is the Thursday Informational Net. Topic is Hurricane Science. And since I'm not sure who to turn it to, I'm going to actually turn it over to KY6V as he continues. I'll be in the background, but I'll be working on other things. So KY6V, the gavel's all yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V, and this is our SCARS monthly informational net. The subject of discussion this evening will be on hurricane science. And this will cover how a hurricane starts to develop, what stages it goes through in its development, such as tropical disturbance, depressions, tropical storms, and then into the five different intensity stages it can develop itself into. The information will include what factors need to be present for all of this to happen, and further, what dictates how the storm moves and in what direction. To top the subject off, we'll be presenting some of the ideas people have had to stop something like this in their tracks, along with NOAA's reaction to these theories, which you will probably find interesting. Along the way this evening, we hope to hear from those in the audience as to their experiences, their thoughts, and any questions that they may have. So with all of that said, let's get this program started with the first segment narrator. Let me first buy a nickel and recharge the timers and tell you a little bit of an inside story. When George and I were discussing how we should probably lay out this program for this evening, I mentioned to George that I had a quote for the day. And my quote was, Alexa, stop that hurricane. Well, the long and the short of it is, when George got to running his fingers over the keyboard and putting the script together, he decided he was going to change my quote for the day. And instead of Alexa, the quote read, "Scotty, stop that hurricane. Beam it to Alpha Centauri, please. Energize. Exclamation, exclamation, exclamation point." Without further ado, and the master of ceremonies for the knowledge of circular rotation in the northern hemisphere, and we'll be discussing this southern also, is NO70. Hello, George. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, Gordon. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening to everyone on the South Cars Thursday Information Net tonight. I want to say also good evening to Dave. I understand Chief W4RJ will be here later tonight as well. And we're glad that you are here. We look forward to hearing from you. I'd like to begin by saying that with hurricane science and research, there have been a lot of people who have given their careers and even their lives in the research, and that research leading to preservation of life and property. So this is going to be a little bit long, but I'd like to read the acknowledgments and copyright acknowledgments and other legal items, if you'll bear with me. But, you know, that it's a small price to pay for us to recognize the great price that they've all paid themselves. Let me reset. So I'd like to say that South Cars, its members and its visitors and the board of directors wish to acknowledge the many contributions of first responders, hurricane science researchers and organizations, humanitarian relief agencies, climatologists, atmospheric and space scientists, and all who contribute to our knowledge of our world, atmospheric science, and tropical cyclone research and observation. We all want to especially acknowledge the following publications and organizations whose public information was available for the preparation of this program that is being presented by South Cars tonight under the Creative Commons copyright licenses and copyright provisions. Acknowledgement is made of the research and public safety efforts also of all organizations that were used in the preparation of tonight's program, including NOAA, NASA, the National Hurricane Center, the Central Pacific Hurricane Center, the University of Toronto, the University of Illinois Atmospheric Sciences Department, the Hurricane Research Division, Atlantic Oceanographic and Meteorological Laboratory of NOAA, the Cooperative Institute for Marine and Atmospheric Studies, CIMAS, the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, CIMSS, NASA's Cyclone Global Navigation Satellite System, or CYGNSS, NOAA's Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program, HFIP, the Joint Center for Satellite Data and Simulation, JCSDA, which is a collaboration of NOAA, NASA, the U.S. Navy, and the U.S. Air Force, of which we do have two Navy people tonight, at least here with us tonight, the Vortex Southeast, whose goal of Vortex-SC program is to improve understanding and prediction of severe weather, including tornadoes in the Southeast United States. Let me reset. Also would like to acknowledge the National Weather Service, the UCARS University Corporation for Atmospheric Research, in service to the National Center for Atmospheric Research and the National Science Foundation, Britannica.com, and all individuals and organizations who have given their careers, missions, and lives to better our understanding of cyclonic and severe weather systems and how to survive them. So, again, our great appreciation for all of the people mentioned above and those not mentioned. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dave, Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zula Lima over in Wales, who has been so helpful as well with helping to get this TIN put together. And Dave, thank you for being here, especially given the fact that you're filling in for Declan at his own middle school while he goes on to high school, and you go back to middle school, but as a teacher. GW8SZL. Thank you, Dave. And I'm 7-0.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Thank you very much, George. I missed that, the overview. Hurricanes are the most violent storms on Earth. People call these storms by other names, such as typhoons or cyclones, depending on where they occur. The scientific term for all these storms is tropical cyclone. Only tropical cyclones that form over the Atlantic Ocean or Eastern Pacific Ocean are called hurricanes. Whatever they are called, tropical cyclones all form the same way. Some hurricanes have their predominant feature of greater moisture or greater wind speed, surge in wind directions, humidity level, temperature profile between the bottom and top of the convected vertical tunnel, and steering columns and currents from surrounding weather systems during the hurricane's formation. Because hurricanes are convected weather systems dependent upon temperature, humidity, and environmental energy, it is easiest to understand hurricanes if we understand how thunderstorms are formed from convective activity. Once we understand thunderstorm convective activity, we will be able to understand how hurricanes are formed from convective activity with the added energy of spin and rotation added to the storm system. Here with more about thunderstorm genesis and lightning activity is our very own George, NO70.
Well, thank you, Dave. Before I read that, let me ask if there's anyone with who would like to check in, make their presence known for the net tonight. Anyone who might like to comment or have any questions about what's been covered so far, I just would like to say hello. Please call now. This is NO70. Over. Well, all right, nothing heard, so let me continue. I'd like to ask you a question. Have you ever seen a thunderstorm cloud with an anvil or a flathead at the top? That anvil cloud head is the product of upward thrusts of moisture from the ground below. An anvil forms when the updraft, or the warm air rising, has reached a point where the surrounding air is about the same temperature or even warmer. That then caps off that anvil, the cloud growth abruptly stops and then flattens out to take the shape of an anvil or a flattened top. Now, the moisture, the rising unstable air that keeps rising when given a nudge, and a lifting mechanism are required to create a thunderstorm. Now, thunderstorms are made of hot and cold regions of the atmosphere that trade places with each other over one area of ground or over water bodies. Typically, they are made of warm, moist air close to the ground and cold air dry aloft. I think now you begin to see the similarity between thunderstorms and hurricanes. So let's look at it a little more closely. Columns of cooled air then in a thunderstorm or hurricane sink earthward, striking the ground with strong downdrafts and horizontal winds. At the same time, electrical charges accumulate on cloud particles made of water droplets and ice. Let me reset. Lightning discharges occur when the accumulated electric charge becomes sufficiently large. Lightning heats the air it passes through so intensely and quickly that shock waves are produced by the lightning, and then these shock waves are heard as claps and rolls of thunder. On occasion, severe thunderstorms are accompanied by swirling vortices of air that become concentrated and powerful enough to form tornadoes. Tornadoes are rapidly rotating columns of air going aloft and returning back to the ground in a swirling motion, like water going down the kitchen drain in a vortex, or like a lake emptying into a newly opened sinkhole that allows gravity to pull the water down into the underground open area of matter that is at a different density than if water were present underground instead. So that's why you get a swirl in the sink drain. So let's hear some more detail about this, courtesy of Dave, G38SZL. Thank you, Dave. Your turn.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. During the formation of a thunderstorm, as the air rises, it transfers heat from the surface of the Earth to the upper levels of the atmosphere. The process of convection. The water vapor it contains begins to cool, releases the heat, condenses and forms a cloud. The cloud eventually grows upward into areas where the temperature is below freezing. As a storm rises into freezing air, different types of ice particles can be created from freezing liquid drops. The ice particles can grow by condensing vapor, like frost, and by collecting smaller liquid drops that haven't frozen yet, a state called supercooled. When two ice particles collide, they usually bounce off each other, but one particle can rip off a little bit of ice from the other one and grab some electric charge. Lots of these collisions build up big regions of electric charges to cause a bolt of lightning, which creates the sound waves we hear as thunder. For more about the stages of thunderstorm formation and dissipation, and how the stages are similar to hurricane formation, here is Chief W4RFJ.
Yeah, I'll pick it up here if you don't mind, Dave. Let me make sure that I've got it. This is KY6V. Okay, it looks like Roger has been detained, so if you'll bear with me, allow me to step in here for this segment at any rate. We're talking about the thunderstorm life cycle. And there are three stages in the life of a thunderstorm. They are the developing stage, the mature stage, and the dissipating stage. Now, isn't that a mouthful? A thunderstorm enters the development stage and is observed as a rising column of air developing into a cumulus cloud. We've all heard about cumulus clouds. So the cumulus cloud soon looks like a tower. As the updraft continues to develop, there is little or no rain during this stage, but occasional lightning. Now, the mature stage begins as the updraft feeds the storm, and precipitation in the form of rain or ice crystals, known as hail, or as George KW4LCB has noted, can even be falling fish if the updraft began over water and pulled fish out of the water. Let me buy a nickel here. So when the downdraft and rain cooled, the air spreads out along the ground. It forms a gust front or a line of gusty winds. The mature stage is the most likely time for hail, heavy rain, frequent lightning, strong winds, and tornadoes. Eventually, a large amount of precipitation is produced and the updraft is overcome by the downdraft beginning the dissipating stage. If the incoming air brings to being to arrive in a way that causes rotation in a thunderstorm column, the beginning of a tornado or thunderstorms have arrived. Okay, I'm going to pick up the next section here also. I'm going to take a quick break. Does anybody like to check in? Tell us since you're there. Any questions on what has been covered so far, that type of thing? This is KY6V, over.
Comment NO70.
NO70. Go ahead, George.
Well, Grant, I also would like to mention regarding the lightning that the height of the lightning strike is actually higher than the storm. The recent research has shown what are called sprites that actually appear at the top of the lightning bolt, and usually that's going to be above the clouds itself that generated the lightning strike. Which gets into all sorts of interesting phenomenon regarding ionospheric charges. We even have done TINs here about ionospheric charges, and very interesting topic. And also the fact that the direction of lightning strike formation is different than what has been conventional wisdom in the past. All worthy comments. I see there might be another station that's joined the program, so hopefully they will also check in. I'll turn it back to you, Gordon. KY6V on the South Guards TIN, NO70.
Okay. Thank you, George. I've got a couple of questions relative to the lightning activity, but we'll get into that if time permits. Let me go in a little further, guys and gals, on hurricane formation. Warm, moist air is needed as fuel for tropical cyclones. And the cyclones only form over warm waters near the equator. The warm, moist air over the ocean rises upward from the near to the surface. As the rising air moves up and away from the surface, there is less air left near the surface. That makes sense, I would think. The rising form air causes an area of lower air pressure, and that is below the storm. So it's all starting to make sense, I think. As the storm continues to form, new air from surrounding areas with higher air pressure pushes in to the low pressure area, becomes warm, moist, rises, and cools. The water in the air forms a whole system of clouds and the resulting wind spins and grows, fed by the ocean's heat and water evaporating from the surface. A tropical cyclone has so many cumulus clouds that they form huge circular bands. Let me recharge the timers here for a second. So as the storm system rotates faster and faster, an eye forms in the center. It is very calm and clear in the eye, with very low air pressure. High pressure air from above flows down into the eye. So what happens here is the storms that form north of the equator spin counterclockwise. Storms south of the equator spin clockwise. The difference is because of the Earth's rotation on its axis. If you could slice into a tropical cyclone, you would see warm, moist air rising from the ocean surface and forming clouds and bands around the eye. Cool, dry air sinks in the eye and between the bands of the clouds. The differing air currents result in a rotation of the rising bands of clouds. So here with a little more information on wind speed differences and between storms, cyclones, and hurricanes is our professor over there in Wales, David Europe, GW8SZL from KY6V.
Yes, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, thank you, Gordon. A tropical depression is a tropical cyclone with maximum sustained winds of 38 miles per hour, which is 33 knots or less. A tropical storm is a tropical cyclone with maximum sustained winds of 39 to 73 miles per hour, which is 34 to 63 knots. A hurricane is a tropical cyclone with maximum sustained winds of 74 miles per hour, which is 64 knots or higher. In the Western North Pacific, hurricanes are called typhoons. Similar storms in the Indian Ocean and South Pacific Ocean are called cyclones. A major hurricane is a tropical cyclone with maximum sustained winds of 111 miles per hour, 96 knots or higher, corresponding to a Category 3, 4 or 5 on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale. When tropical cyclones hit land, they usually weaken, because they are no longer gathering energy from the warm ocean waters. These storms often move far inland, dumping many inches of rain and causing lots of wind damage before they die out completely. Let me reset. Here are the tropical cyclone categories. Category 1, wind speed in miles per hour, 74 to 95, with minimal damage at landfall. but with a storm surge of 4 to 5 feet. Category 2, a wind speed of between 96 and 110 miles an hour, with moderate damage at landfall, with a corresponding storm surge of 6 to 8 feet. And a Category 3, with a wind speed of between 111 and 129 miles per hour, with extensive damage at landfall, with a corresponding storm surge of 9 to 12 feet. And a Category 4, with a wind speed of 130 to 156 miles per hour, causes extreme damage at landfall, and a storm surge of 13 to 18 feet. And the Category 5 is 157 miles per hour or higher, with catastrophic damage at landfall, and with a storm surge of 19 plus feet. There are satellites built by NASA and operated by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA for short, capture images of hurricanes from 22,300 miles above the Earth's surface. Let me read that. The satellites significantly help save lives and reduce property damage by helping to predict storms and warn people about the path and ground speed and direction, enabling forecasters to predict where and when these severe storms will hit land. A hurricane is primarily a tropical cyclone, which is also referred to as a tropical depression, a cyclonic storm and typhoon. It is characterized by heavy rain, strong winds, and a massive low-pressure center. It is closely associated with thunderstorms in the southern hemisphere. It usually follows a clockwise rotation, but on the contrary, it rotates counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere. It features an eye, the diameter of which varies depending on its intensity. Aside from these details, there are other interesting things to learn about it, such as the hurricane eye diameter. So I'll pass that over to George for the stages of development of a hurricane.
Well, thank you, Dave. And this is the South Cars Thursday Information Net for September of 2019. I want to thank each and every one of you being here for this information net on hurricane science. Glad that you could be here with us as well. Let me offer the opportunity for anyone to check in and say hello or to ask any questions or make any comments that you might have. And we'd like to recognize your presence for the net tonight. So please call and say hello now. This is NO70. Over.
NO70, this is WA3LXD. Greetings to everybody. Excellent session. I do have one quick question.
Well, good evening, Dave, and thank you for being here tonight. Really appreciate your participation on the TIN tonight on Hurricane Science, and we'd love to hear your question. Please go ahead. WA3LXD, NO70, over.
Well, thank you. I always wondered this question, and that is, when they talk about the wind speed of a hurricane in the different categories, is this wind speed at ground level? Is it at some predetermined elevation? What is the, where is that wind speed measured at? Back to net.
Well, Dave, that is a very good question, and I'm going to be the first to admit that I'm not entirely sure exactly where if they have a particular convention at one particular altitude. I would tend to think that they are basing that on where they take the measurements depending upon the hurricane reconnaissance flights, any drop sond sensors that the hurricane reconnaissance flights may have dropped into the hurricane storm system. With the improvement in radar technology, depending upon the range, especially since it would have to be a Doppler radar, that Doppler may well be able to detect a wind speed as well. So that's a very good question. What I will have to do is do some research on that and try to answer that question on one of our later nets, either in the AM connection or one of the rag shoes that we have. But an excellent question, Dave, WA3LXD, NO70.
Well, thank you for that. And again, that's good information coming out tonight, especially for those of us who live in Florida. Thanks again, WA3LXD.
Well, Dave, thank you for mentioning about Florida. I have to say that Gordon's interest in this hurricane science, when the opportunity became for our discussing it, for me, I was really interested in participating and doing the research and preparing these notes because of the Hurricane Dorian and what happened recently with its passage and the fact that it came so close to Florida and that it, of course, did hit the Carolinas. And at this point in time, oh good, I'm so happy to see that our professor down under, Robert, VK2DY, is here, according to the text box here. So, Robert, may I please call upon you to elaborate on the audio here, what I'm seeing as excellent points that are in the text box. May I call upon you, please, sir? VK2DY on the South Cars TIN, NO70, over.
NO70, this is VK2DY, Robert in Shelleyville Ridge, New South Wales, Metropolitan Sydney. Well, I wish I were Professor Down Under, but I Googled it. The measurement for wind speed is at 10 meters above ground level, and it's taken at either a 1 minute or 10 minute interval. So it's an average of over that time period. And it's all in Wikipedia. So I guess my knowledge of it is a little bit limited, but that's what Wikipedia says. So I guess that's the answer. Of course, we have cyclones down here, but they don't come as far south as here. So I am fortunate not to see them, but they do wreak havoc up in Queensland. Anyway, thank you for taking my check-in, VK2DY.
VK2DY on the South Cars TIN on Hurricane Science, NO70. Well, thank you, Robert. I honestly did not know the question because the... And I'm ashamed. I should have looked into that further. I do know that an acquaintance from my college days was a Navy pilot who was assigned to a Hurricane Hunter airplane. But this was a few decades ago, and the radiosonde or detection science has changed quite a bit since then. So I appreciate your finding that. All right. Thank you, Robert. And let me ask if there's anyone else who would like to say hello or check in or have any comments or questions on Hurricane Science or just wants to say hello on this TIN. Please call now. This is NO70. Over. Nothing heard. All right. So let me then pick up with what Dave was kind enough to provide the assignment for me to cover, and that is the stages of development of a hurricane. Now, according to the University of Illinois, the stages of development from tropical depression to hurricane are the following. There are a life cycle of stages from birth to death of a hurricane. A tropical disturbance in time can grow to a more intense stage by attaining a specified sustained wind speed, which Robert just made us aware of. There are three stages normally recognized in the development of tropical disturbances. The three stages are tropical depression, tropical storm, and hurricane. Now, hurricanes can often live for a long period of time, as much as 2 to 3 weeks. They may initiate as a cluster of thunderstorms over the tropical ocean waters, and once a disturbance has become a tropical depression, that was the first one of the three I mentioned, the amount of time it takes to become a tropical storm, the second one I mentioned, can take as little as half a day to as much as a couple of days, if it happens at all. The same possible formation or non-formation may be observed for the transition of a tropical storm into a hurricane. So not all tropical storms become a hurricane, but pretty assuredly a hurricane will have been a tropical storm before it became a hurricane. The prevailing atmospheric and oceanic conditions play major roles in determining a storm's growth and destruction cycle. All right, with that, I'm going to ask Gordon if he would, well, let me check with net control. Gordon, do you recommend we go to Dave, back to Dave, or did you want to pick up the information about the structure of a thunderstorm? So KY6B, net control for the TIN, NO70. Over.
No, I'd be happy to do it, George. If that's okay, I'll just proceed with that section.
Thank you, Gordon. All yours. This is NO70.
All right. Thank you, sir. And good evening to you, Robert, Professor Down Under. You had me smiling when you said your source was Wikipedia. You know, I use that quite regularly. And I will say, out of school here, and that's a pun when I say school, I have found in my experience that the educational people of this world, particularly our United States educational divisions and departments, say if you're going to use Wikipedia in something that you're putting into the classroom, give us a second reference. Yeah, that's probably because of the way the information comes in, but just a little bit of a tidbit. Okay, we're going to talk about the eye here. Let me buy a nickel for a second and set everybody's timers. The dense wall of thunderstorms surrounding the eye has the strongest winds within the storm. Changes in the structure of the eye and eye wall can cause changes in the wind speed, which is an indicator of the storm's intensity. The eye can grow or shrink in size, and double concentric eyeballs can form. So they've got a little tricky stuff in there that they can do and sometimes don't. Now, on the spiral rain bands, the storm's outer rain bands often, with hurricanes or tropical storm force winds, can extend a few hundred miles from the center. And so you don't get out of its reach until you're way, way, way far away in most cases. These dense bands of thunderstorms with spirally, slowly counterclockwise, range in width from a few miles to tens of miles and are 50 to 300 miles long. Now that's what? Three-quarters of the state or so of the state of Florida, anyway. Sometimes the bands of the eye are obscured by higher-level clouds, making it difficult for forecasters to use satellite imagery to monitor the storm. Now, on the hurricane size, the typical hurricanes are about 300 miles wide, although they can vary considerably, as I think we all know. Hurricane circulation and movement. In the northern hemisphere, hurricane winds circulate around the center in a counterclockwise fashion. That's been mentioned already. And this means that the wind's direction at your location depends on where the hurricane's eye is. Now, let me give you an example here. A boat on the northern edge of a hurricane, Fran, for example, would experience winds from the east, while a boat on the southern edge would have a westerly wind. So you sit back and think about that. The air in which the hurricane is embedded is a constantly moving and changing river of air. I'm going to buy another nickel. I don't want a purple crystal. Other features in that flow, such as high and low pressure systems, can greatly affect the speed and the path of the hurricane. In turn, it can modify the environment around the storm. Typically, a hurricane's forward speed average around 15 to 20 miles an hour. However, some hurricanes stall, and we've just had that recently happen to us on Dorian, often causing devastating heavy rains. Others can accelerate to more than 60 miles an hour, and Hurricane Hazel in 1954 hit North Carolina on the morning of the 15th of October. And 14 hours later, it reached Toronto, Canada, where it caused 80 deaths. So hurricanes follow a fairly straight course, while others loop and wobble along the path. These seemingly erratic changes are difficult to forecast. My hat goes off to the forecasters because of these problems, and will be discussed in more detail as we move along. Okay, I'm going to take a break here. Anybody like to check in, say that they're here with us? Any questions on what we've covered so far? Or just say hello. KY6V for South Cars.
NO70.
Yeah, okay, George, go ahead. And I was going to ask if you'd like me to take the next section as well. Over.
Roger, let me answer that in just a second. I mentioned earlier that George KW4LCB has made us aware that during the uptake and updraft of moisture, when a system forms over water, that it can rain fish. And so I'd like to, and I just saw him in the text box, so I'd like to ask Gordon if you would call and try to coax George South, KW4LCV, out of his comfortable South Cars leather padded chair there to talk to us about falling fish. KY6V-NO70.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there's anybody capable about talking about falling fish, it's George. Good evening, Mr. T. I saw you sneaking into the text box. Tell everybody, he sent me an article that was printed in a newspaper, I think it was a newspaper, of a hurricane that he was told all about from a relative, and it was dated in 1935. And, of course, he hails from the Keys, so he's got a lot of stories in that respect. KW4LCB, KY6V, would you like to elucidate and that kind of thing? Over.
KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo. Evening time all. Yeah, buddy. Well, that storm of 1935, Gordon, it did take a few of my relatives there in the Keys there. It kind of put a real bad hurting on Henry Flagler's folly, his railroad that ran down into the Keys there. But being from Key West, you know, only a few blocks from the ocean side there, we call them water spouts there, you know, just circular updraft, a big old vacuum cleaner sucking the water up out of the ocean, you know, and kind of suck the fish up while it's doing. And this particular at times they would go over the island there, and would disperse those fish all over the island. As you mentioned earlier, the uptake, let me pause for the calls there. The uptake of the draft there gets a little bit colder there, and it kind of freezes the fish. So what can we say? There's been times that we had a cold dispersed fish all over the island there. With that there, we'll throw it back your way. Give you a chance to catch your breath there a moment or two. Enjoy the procession so far. With that, we'll return it back to you, KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo. And by the way, some of these fish are a pretty good sized fish, and I just, my little old knee climber just come in and said, uh-oh, so it's time to pause for the calls.
Well, howdy to your knee climber there. I was going to just ask you that question, George. Were there some pretty sizable guys that got sucked up in that updraft and then deposited wherever they plunked, fell, ended up, whatever? Okay, I'm going to buy one more timeout pause here, and then I want to get in for a moment or two and talk about the sides. The actual sides, port side, starboard side, you know, that kind of thing on a hurricane. This is KY6V taking a quick pause. Okay, the right side of the storm, as a general rule of thumb, the hurricane's right side relative to the direction it is traveling. Okay, you got to remember that. The direction it's traveling, the right side of it. If it's going north, and if it's going north, the right side's going to be east. But if it's going west, the right side's going to be the north side. That kind of thing. And it's the most dangerous side. Because of the additive effect of the hurricane wind speed and speed of the larger atmospheric flow, the steering winds, the increased winds on the right side increased the storm surge described in the overall situation, and the tornadoes are all also more common in this area. Now, pretend you are standing behind the hurricane with your back to the steering flow. In this case, the right side is the eastern section of the hurricane. If we're traveling east to west, as I mentioned before, the right side would be the north section. The winds around the hurricane's eye are moving in a counterclockwise fashion. At point A, the hurricane winds are nearly in line with the steering winds, and adding to the strength of the winds. Now, what all this means, as an example, if the steering currents are 30 miles per hour and the average hurricane winds are 100 miles per hour, the wind speed will be 130 miles per hour. On the other hand, the winds at point B, or conversely, are moving opposite those of the steering winds, and therefore slow to 70 miles an hour, and that would be the 100 minus 30 instead of 100 plus 30. And incidentally, the Hurricane Center forecast takes this into effect in the account of the official wind estimates. Excuse me. So, David, elucidate this more or compound the interest. KY6V to GW8SZL. Over.
Okay, thank you very much, Gordon. Now, according to the National Hurricane Center, a tropical cyclone is a rotating, organized system of clouds and thunderstorms that originates over tropical or subtropical waters and has a closed, low low-level circulation. Tropical cyclones form in between 5 and 30 degrees north latitude, typically move toward the west. Sometimes the winds in the middle and upper levels of the atmosphere change and steer the cyclone toward the north and northwest. When tropical cyclones reach latitudes near 30 degrees north, they often move northeast. Looking more closely at Atlantic and Eastern Pacific climatology, we see that the Atlantic hurricane season runs from June the 1st to November the 30th, and the Eastern Pacific hurricane season runs from May the 15th to November the 30th. The Atlantic Basin includes the Atlantic Ocean, Caribbean Sea, and the Gulf of Mexico. The Eastern Pacific Basin extends to 140 degrees west. A reset. Regarding hurricane return periods of time. Hurricane return periods are the frequency at which a certain intensity of hurricane can be expected within a given distance of a given location. In simpler terms, a return period of 20 years for a major hurricane means that on average, during the previous 100 years, a Category 3 or greater hurricane passed within 50 nautical miles, that's 58 miles, of that location about 5 times. We would then expect, on average, an additional 5 Category 3 or greater hurricanes within that radius over the next 100 years. For example, by the beginning of September in an average year, we would expect to have had 4 named systems, 2 of which would be hurricanes and 1 of which would be of Category 3 or greater in strength. More information on return periods can be found from NOAA, Technical Memorandum. That's November Whiskey Sierra, November Hotel Charlie, 38. On the NHC, National Hurricane Center, Risk Analysis Program, abbreviated as HURISC, which is Hotel Uniform Romeo India Sierra Kilo. Here we're more about the hurricane vertical structure of the ocean current response to a hurricane is George, NO70.
Well, thank you, Dave. Let me pause and ask if there are anyone who has any comments, questions, wants to just check in, wants to say hi, or would like to comment on anything they've heard so far. Please call now. This is NO70. Over.
Comment, KW4MI Charlie Bravo.
Thank you, George South, KW4LCD, NO70. Go ahead, please.
Well, just to bring it up, remember, these time periods is not chiseled in stone, and getting back to the hurricane that tore up the Keys there, that came in April. So nothing's positive when it comes to weather there. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Oh, what a mouthful, George. You know, Florida with its number of hurricanes arriving there. The Gulf hurricanes, and I'm thinking specifically of Andrew and Katrina. Forgive me for using those names that evoke bad memories, but with the arrival of those storms, with Dorian having gone through recently, averages and statistics are one thing, as George KW4LCB just said. Reality is something different. And speaking of reality, I'm aware that even one of our presenters tonight was around a TV tower during a hurricane that ceased to be a TV tower standing up. So we'll I'll stop there, but just say yes, hurricanes are dangerous, and again, appreciation to all of those who even are here tonight that maybe have gone through this. It must take some strength on your part to be here as we talk about hurricanes when you have gone through one. Let me reset. All right, picking up then, Dave asked me to speak more about the vertical structure of a hurricane's ocean current response. So let's talk about the vertical structure of a hurricane and how they take a look at it. Now, during the passage of Hurricane Norbert in 1984, the Hurricane Research Division of NOAA conducted a planetary boundary layer experiment that included the deployment of airborne expendable current profilers. Okay, airborne expendable current profilers. They were taking a profile of the airborne current profile of the air aloft as they made studies of these systems. These airborne expendable current profilers, abbreviated AXCP, a total of 16 of them were provided for the first time high-resolution vertical profiles of currents and temperatures in hurricane wind conditions. Think of it as dropping a profiler through, perhaps. Not sure exactly how they deliver those, but it may have been dropping through the system. Now, although the energy input by the hurricane is spread over all of the vertical wavelengths, most of the energy is contained in the worst four vertical modes, which then govern the dynamics in the wake region. Let me reset. So, putting that a little more simply, most of the energy is contained in the worst four vertical modes that are detected by the AXCPs, and those modes are the ones which govern the dynamics in the wake region of the hurricane. The hurricane is like a boat going through the water, and as you know, a boat leaves a wake. The hurricane leaves a wake, and that's where these profilers also come in to be used. So there's more information of those available online. Very interesting to hear and read how they dissect a hurricane, some of which is beyond the scope of the program tonight, but well worth your additional attention. Let me reset. So here with more about hurricane eyewall destruction is Gordon, KY6B. Over.
Well, thank you, Mr. George. KY6V here. The diameter of a hurricane eye. Now, this is sort of interesting, guys and gals. They're primarily circular in shape. The eye of the hurricane comes in various sizes. Its diameter ranges from 1.9 to 230 miles. Now, for our friends on the other side of the puddle here, like David, that's equates to 3 to 370 kilometers. Upon reaching the peak, the eye usually contracts to an average diameter of 6.2 to 16 miles, and that equates to 10 to 25 kilometers. So, to determine the actual size of hurricanes, science experts rely heavily on the radius of the outmost closed isobar. And they've got an abbreviation, like everybody's got an abbreviation. They call that ROCI, the radius of the outmost closed isobar. A hurricane or cyclone is classified as a midget, or very small, if it has a radius lower than 130 miles or 222 kilometers. An average-sized hurricane has a radius ranging from 270 to 414 miles. And a hurricane is classified as very large. I mean a big dude. If its radius measures 552 miles or 888 kilometers. That's a sizable piece of wind, I'll tell you. According to the UCARS Coalition, the Hurricane Center is relatively calm. I want to make sure I haven't timed out here. Clear area, usually 20 to 40 miles across. Let me buy a nickel. I don't want that purple crystal. People in the midst of the hurricane are often amazed at how the incredible fierce winds and rains can suddenly stop and the sky clear when the eye comes over them. Then just as quickly, the winds and rain begin again, but this time from the opposite direction. Let me say I went through a hurricane, Andrew, Cat 5, down in Miami in 1992, and I did that. I walked out of the building that I was in the middle of the eye, and it was just as quiet and peaceful and serene as anything you could think of. And then the back end started coming in. Holy heck broke loose, and everything went with it. So that's my story, and I'm going to stick to it. It goes back to you, George, NO70 from KY6V.
KY6V, NO70. Gordon, you mentioned, I have a question before I proceed with my next section here. You mentioned the outermost closed isobar, or ROCI, or Rocky. that brings up cartoon reminders. I have a question for you, Gordon. I know that you are, or have been, an accomplished aircraft pilot. Would you feel comfortable with speaking quickly about an isobar being a pressure delineator and how wind speed is affected by how close or how far away the isobars are located? That may help to understand how the isobars relate to the hurricane. KY6B and 07.
Well, I have to agree with the way that you put it, George. Exactly. I don't think that I have been familiar before with the nomenclature of ROCI, but isobars and that kind of stuff I am familiar with. But yeah, you're fine on that. I would take no issue on it at all. Over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. I see George, KW4LCB, has a comment on isobars. Let me turn it to him, KW4LCB, NO70, over.
No, sir, not on isobars, but as the eye, and, you know, like I mentioned, basically a fisherman in the Keys there, and most mates and captains, everyone concerned in the boating area there would leave their homes and go check on their boats as the eye of the storm would be passing over. We used to, take engine blocks and sink them and run chains through them and tie the bow line to the chain and would let the boat swing in the wind. But as Gordon mentioned, after the eye was passed, the winds would pick up from another direction. And usually walking home from the boats there along the boulevard, we'd have coconut trees about every 12 to 15 foot, and there's been a time or two where all we can get was from one coconut tree to the other, just to hang on there to catch our breath so we could fight it to the next one to get back home. where the brunt of the storm was coming at us again. KW4 AM, Charlie Bravo.
Well, thank you, George. With the storm of the storm brunt and the wind speed and isobars, for those listening on the podcast that will be posted within the next day or two by Gordon, if you draw on a map a line, let's say where something is a certain air pressure, where it's the same pressure, and then you increase the pressure 100 millimeters of mercury, and then draw a line where that is. The closer together those things, those isobars are, then that means that there is a greater variation over a smaller distance, and that tends to make higher wind speeds. If isobars are far apart, you get lower wind speeds because there's less pressure to equalize per measure of distance. So isobars is something worth looking into. Okay, let me see if there are any other comments before I move on to some looking at possible prevention or hurricane behavior modification. Let's see if there are any other comments, your check-ins, or hellos. Please call now. This is N070. Very good. And I really like what George KW for LCB just said about the storm strength. That was a good thought. All right. I was asked during the development of this program to consider the topics of hurricane prevention obstacles, energy of hurricane versus disruptive methods, and hurricane prevention, attack, and delivery obstacles. Now, we're moving here in the presentation tonight from science fact to science fiction as well. But hopefully, any good science fiction is based in good science fact. And I had a very enjoyable time trying to think through Gordon's question about how to prevent or steer a hurricane that has not been thought of before, but that might work. Now, here are the thoughts that came about, and again, I'm moving from fact to fiction here, and this is supposition, but who knows what might happen in hurricane science in the next few years. Look at our changes in technology. Let me reset. All that being said, let me continue with the point. Prevention of a hurricane would require controlling vast continents of circulating air. We talked about how the hurricanes are circulating cyclonic systems. So prevention would involve disrupting these global currents that are larger than the size of the hurricane itself, which can be very large, as we heard earlier. And we'd have to modify the seasonal air and ground temperatures, reversing any season-long heating and cooling accumulation of heat, called entropies, from the long late winter, spring, and summer sessions. The total energy contained in a thunderstorm over water or a waterspout or in a developing cyclone from the same cyclonic rotational energies, the total energy that goes into forming that cyclone is much greater than any man-made energy sources, land or satellite, than we have available today and that we may have technologically available for the foreseeable future. In other words, the hurricane's bigger than anything we can throw at it and in today's technology. Now, regarding disruptive methods, trying to disrupt the hurricane, here were the thoughts that I came after reading to myself. Attempts to disrupt a hurricane eyewall may be beyond today's technological methods as well. For example, if we shoot a laser blast at the wall of the eye of a hurricane in an effort to disrupt it, that laser blast is only going to evaporate the moisture contained in that eyewall, but probably have little to no effect on the storm rotation that gathers those clouds into the bands and the moisture into the cyclonic energy of the storm that creates the eye wall. Other moisture would simply fill in the gaps left behind in moisture by the laser blast vaporizing the eyewall clouds or moisture itself. So the laser hits it, evaporates the eyewall cloud. Hurricane just heals itself, puts a band on, and goes on. How's that for a powerful system? Then you can reset and continue. Continuing the science fiction part of tonight's Hurricane Science TIN, regarding prevention and steering methods and how they might be delivered, there have been some proposals made that have different promises or problems. Let's say that the hurricane steering influences high pressure and low pressure systems are well known. They really are. We can figure out what the steering influences are by aerial observation. Low pressure systems are typically well absorbed into the low pressure of the hurricane itself. With the two hurricane systems rotating around each other closer and closer until they become one. A similar phenomenon can be seen in the merger of two astronomical black holes that swirl around each other until they eventually merge together into one larger black hole. The vortices of the two black holes merge to become one big black hole storm. You have probably seen images on that on videos as you may have perused some science documentaries. Let me reset. So we would expect a hurricane or two hurricanes, which are low pressure areas, to merge into one larger hurricane as they get closer and closer in most cases. Now, in the case of a high pressure system that's located close to the hurricane, its position, especially north or east hurricane in the northern hemisphere, for example, of the high pressure will influence the direction of travel toward or away from land. We saw that occur recently with Hurricane Dorian. If we could steer high pressure systems in the ocean where those high pressure systems surround the hurricane, we may be able to steer the hurricane. Now the question then becomes, how would we steer the high pressure systems so the high pressure systems could push the hurricane low pressure systems around? Resetting. A method to steer the high pressure system may be to affect the sea surface temperature by the presence or absence of temperature changing equipment, such as solar panels that could be deactivated by lowering them under the seawater surface so their effect would be changed by the different absorption as of lower and higher sunlight as it came closer to the surface of the water or more submerged, or by wind energy turbines that then could be stopped and started, thereby affecting wind speed and direction, and therefore the high pressure area speed and direction, which could possibly then affect the hurricane travel direction and travel speed. But the world, are you going to get enough wind energy turbines there to create enough of an effect to steer one of these 300-mile wide high pressure systems? Resetting. Another possibility, another system such as underwater energy spouts. You know, if you, as has been proposed by some well-known individuals, if you put underwater energy spouts in there, and let's say you put it halfway between Africa and the United States, how would you know where to put it so that all the hurricanes would go over that spot instead of north or south of those energy spouts? That's a good puzzle to try to solve. So biological ocean life also it would be important to the possibility of underwater energy spouts because you would have an effect on biological ocean life and therefore the worldwide food chain and the resultant human food supply of edible fish. It may have an effect on other modern medical wonders that would be at risk, from such a massive disruption of the oceanic ecological balance and climatological characteristics important to the Earth and important to the development of those medical miracles, and also important to the already decaying polar and Antarctical polar regions. Think of the melting ice caps resetting. Now, that's a very fast overview. The problem really is a combination of how much energy would be needed to stop the hurricane, and the other problem is delivery of the energy. How do you deliver enough of a jolt to the hurricane to affect its stability and therefore break it apart or affect its direction of travel? So such hurricane prevention delivery systems could possibly cause more damage than the hurricanes themselves if those prevention delivery systems are not carefully considered for their ecological impact. Well, that's taking a look at some possibilities. That's the science fiction part. But, you know, today's science fiction is tomorrow's scientific engineering miracle. Isn't that so true? I'm still looking forward, though, to warp travel and time travel. All right, here with that's a good aside, huh? Here with additional facts and other interesting details about hurricane science is Dave, GW8SZL. Thank you for letting me take the last 5 minutes here, Dave, or whatever it was. GW8SZL, over to you, NO7O.
That's from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, no problems, George. Yeah, I see in the text box that George KW LCB Lima Charlie Bravo said they actually tried to see the hurricane. I never heard of that one. I wonder if George would like to expand on that one for myself and for all the listeners there. From Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima.
Sure thing, Dave. Six Victor could add a little bit more to it, the technical part there, but I don't remember the exact year. We had a hurricane, and scientists was trying to play Papa Nature there and decided to use ionized or iodized crystals, and they seeded one. And what it caused, it caused the hurricane to split and form two eyes. And I think it was off the coast of Jacksonville somewhere at that time there. I'd have to Google it or Wikipedia it there and to find the rest of the story. But memory told me, you know, it's not nice to play with Mother Nature, so just a flash from the past. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo.
Yeah, KW4 LCB. Yeah, thank you for that, George. Yeah, I know about seeding clouds with sodium iodide, I think it is. But I would have thought, okay, never heard of actually trying to see the hurricane. But thank you for that. I'll go and look that one up. I'll do a bit of Googling on that one. But thanks very much for sharing that information with us. Well, here we got some additional facts and other interesting details. The World Meteorological Organization has designated 6 different regional specialized meteorological centers in various parts of the world. These centers have the responsibility of providing hurricane advisories, warnings, and bulletins in order to notify and alert people. More importantly, they study and track the movements of tropical cyclones. For the smaller regions, they rely heavily on the details that the Tropical Cyclone Warning Centers provide. Aside from these organizations, various other institutions are available to provide tropical cyclone and hurricane advisories. These include the Canadian Hurricane Center, the Philippine Atmospheric, Geophysical and Astronomical Services Administration, as well as the Giant Typhoon Warning Center of the United States. Cyclone Katarina was the first South Atlantic cyclone ever recorded. Eventually, it brought Category 2 winds that struck the southern parts of Brazil in March 2004. Let me reset. The Meteorological Service of New Zealand and the Fiji Meteorological Service are responsible for monitoring the southern Pacific area. Meanwhile, various institutions are monitoring the Australian region, namely the Papua New Guinea National Weather Service, Indonesia's Meteorological and Geophysical Agency, and Australia's Bureau of Meteorology. Additionally, the North Indian Ocean is monitored closely by the Indian Meteorological Department. And I will at this time pass it back to George, N070.
Well, thank you, Dave. You know, I'd like to call VK2DY if he is still available through the link, because he may have some updated information regarding the agencies and their responsibilities for monitoring and weather prediction, especially cyclonic weather prediction. So, Professor Robert, VK2DY, are you still there by any chance? This is NO70. Over. Well, nothing heard. All right. I have one thought I would like to mention, rather, and also emphasize, because as I was discussing the science fiction aspect of hurricane prevention and steering, and this would be true not only for hurricanes, but for a lot of other wide area, wide scale research. We pull so many of our modern medical miracles and wonders from raw nature resources. As George Kennedy before LCV said, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. If we disrupt too many of these systems, we may well lose the raw materials that go into building the pharmaceuticals, the understanding that is involved with molecular and submolecular level of medical science. We may lose some understanding, but also gain new understanding. The question is it a good or a bad trade-off? So whatever we do can have an effect in beyond a hurricane system or beyond a wind system or beyond a thunderstorm system or beyond a deep sea exploration or underground exploration or fracking or whatever it might be that affects the underwater and under soil and deeper level of the earth. We have impacts that go beyond the immediate that we need to think about as we consider different options for her prevention, detection, and modification of Mother Nature's behavior. So that would be a thought that I would have to follow through on the point I was trying to make earlier with the biological and ocean life and other modern medical wonders. All right, so with that, let me turn it back to our net control for the net tonight for him to invite others to recheck and comment, and to someone who lives also in Florida, which is close to hurricanes. Well, Gordon, thank you. What a treat and a pleasure. This was a nice intellectual dessert to do this. What a marvelous opportunity. And appreciate people that have been here tonight. KY6V, NO70, over.
Well, thank you, George. KY6V here, and thank you, David. You know, your comment about living in Florida prompts a short story on my part. Having gone through the devastation of Andrew's Cat 5 thing back there in the 90s, after it was all said and done, I said to myself, I don't want to go through another one of these. And so I started thinking about where I could move. And I couldn't find any place that didn't have a problem. you know, I was born in the Hawaiian Islands. I said, well, I'll go back to the Hawaiian Islands. Well, it turns out that there was a hurricane that was hitting the island of Kauai at the time, right after Andrew. San Andreas Fault and all of California's tremors rule that out. Of course, I grew up in California. And I said, well, how about the Midwest? And then there's the tornadoes. And then you got the floods. And stick it out, guys. You know, you just bite the bullet and hold on to it. Let me buy a nickel here. Couple of comments on Mother Nature, but let me see. George, you just made a comment. It's getting late for you, and I bet you want to go to bed, David, but do you have any parting remarks that you'd like to issue at this point? And thank you for your service tonight, sir. Over.
That's from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima. Yeah, I wonder if anybody knows that the hurricanes, I know they're very, very destructive, obviously, but do they have any benefits to the oceans with all the turbulence they cause? Are they actually beneficial in any way to the environment? We're lucky here. We only get rain and miserable weather here over in South Wales and the United Kingdom and the UK for that matter, but more so down here. And we do get the odd funnel cloud. Very rarely touches down, only small ones, very, very small. And water spouts as well, but they're just so rare, and they hit the BBC News when one appears. But I'm just wondering, is there any known, I can Google it, but I wonder if anybody knows if there's any known benefits to the environment, especially the oceans, of hurricanes. Do they help in any way whatsoever? Don't worry about the time. I'm wide awake at the moment. I've had a few cups of coffee. back to you, Gordon. KY6V, GW8SZL. Very, very interesting tonight.
Thank you, David. KY6V here. Well, I'll tell you what. A couple of cups of coffee in the middle of the night would do me in. I wouldn't get any sleep at all. Well, that's an interesting question. I've never heard of anybody mentioning a good side to a hurricane. Everything is always very negative. But that would be an interesting point to research. The only thing that came to my mind, and I was reaching to try and find something that was good out of a hurricane, is that it sure stirs the pot and really makes the waters churn and so on and so forth. And I would think that it's displacing and moving further apart the garbage that humanity is depositing in the water. Plastic bags, and you name it. George, any comments out of you? NO70, KY6V.
KY6V and the South Coast Hurricane Science, TIN, NO70. Right down the same alley you were saying, Gordon. If we look at the deep sea phenomena, I'm still thinking about those two black holes combining as well, the deep sea phenomenon. And if we also remember the Japanese tsunami, where they have seen the waste from the destruction in Japan arrive on the west coast of America, and we consider the medical waste that has been dumped in the oceans, serious medical waste, dirty needles, highly biologically contaminated gloves, supplies, bandages, and so forth. When those are dumped by the illegal dumpers or whoever's put it there, they are in a concentrated spot, as you say, Gordon, and the hurricane would tend to disperse them over a wider area. Now, they're still going to be present. It may be that the currents of the hurricane might pull some of that waste out into the center of the ocean, and it would not affect human life, but could it affect, again, the food chain, the ecological balance of Mother Nature over time? Could it affect the temperature profiles that go into storm creation and direction and steerage? So, yes, I would think that there could be both a beneficial and a dangerous side to the turmoil caused by the rotation and upset of a storm. KY6VNO70.
Well, I'll tell you what, David, over there in Wales, when you look that up, tell us what the answer is. What's good in a hurricane? I'd certainly be interested in hearing that. KY6V here. I'll leave this in a parting shot, and then I think we're going to start winding this down. We're now at 8:36, so we're well into the second hour and motivating on. I wanted to amplify what George said about, you know, you don't fool with Mother Nature. Reminded me when he said that, that my father, when he retired from CBS, was offered a job to manage a private island that was right off, it was in the San Francisco Bay and right off the San Rafael, Marin County area of California. And he wasn't out there very long, and he got into a situation where the caterpillars on the island were multiplying so fast that they were just all over this island. And it wasn't really a big island. It was maybe a mile and a half long and a half a mile wide, something like that, I think. Yeah, let me buy a nickel. So at any rate, he says, well, I'll see what I can do about this. And he went down, picked up some insecticides that were supposed to do away with the caterpillars, and he started spraying the island. Well, he got rid of the caterpillars. I mean, this stuff really worked. And shortly thereafter, with the caterpillars gone, the island got infected with avis. So he couldn't win. This was so many years ago that I don't recall the name of the insecticide anymore, but I do know that it was finally banned from the market. Because what it would take care of caused more problems than what it was supposed to take care of in the first place. Any comments on that, George? And then I think maybe we'll wind this up and put it into a package for a podcast. Over.
Wasn't sure if you meant George North or George South. This is the NO70. I think that's a very good object lesson for nature, and I really appreciate what George South said. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature, but hopefully we can show her respect and help her by being healthy and environmentally conscious, because think about the massive loss of ice at both of our polar caps that are even affecting water level, including the coastal water level, New York City area, which is our financial capital, and other sensitive areas of the coast. So yep, good time to really try to take care of this big blue ball we call home. I wonder if George South has any other thoughts. KW4LCD, 70, you can turn it back to Gordon. Over.
Yeah, buddy. I heard on the news tonight we've lost one-third of the bird population, you know, and what Gordon was talking about his dad there, when I spent time in North Carolina, tried to garden and learn to survive on my own if needed be, I tried gardening there. And growing beans, I had a problem with these Japanese beetles. And I really didn't want to go the pesticides and that stuff, even, well, what can I say, back in the hippie days, long hair, the whole thing. But I read an article where a fellow was having the same problem. What he did was go down his row of beans and grab the Japanese beetles and would smash them in his hands and throw them in the rows there. And did this for a couple weeks there. And next thing I learned, like he also learned, I would see a bird come up behind me and pick them up and eat them. We're training the birds to do that for us. So a month later, I didn't have a problem with Japanese beetles. The birds took care of them for me there. And, you know, the way we are clearing the land and cutting down the trees. And, you know, we got to get back to the earth, because we're losing it. We really are, in more ways than one, because whatever you do in one area sure affects something in another area. With that said, KW4, Alima, Charlie Bravo.
George, I just have to ask this question. You can kick me later. KY6 right here. You opened up your commentary there by saying that we're losing a third of the birds. And then you went into the story of the birds eating the crushed Japanese bugs. If you put the two stories together, is that why we're losing the one-third of the birds? Over.
Well, sir, it's all the chemicals that's going on the yards, the trees, you know, and instead of we letting nature, help nature take care of our bug problem, which they had set up with the bird society and other good insects, to do this for us, you know, we're shooting our own self in the foot. You know, every time we try to get involved, we destroy. What can I say? Every time man touches something, it's changed. You know, we want our well, I'm getting in trouble here. We want to lay back and have the good times and want some machine or some insecticide to do something about it and give it to us there. But what can we say? We're getting lazy and fat and dying of different cancers caused by the stuff we're in. It just... Oh, great day. You got me on the roll. Let me hush up before I get myself in trouble. Back to you, Mr. G.
I love it when you get on a roll there, George. Thank you very much, sir. That was KW4LCB, and this is KY6V for South Cars. Okay, do we have any other commentary out there? Anything for the good of the order before we get the fat lady to sing? And we'll close this session. KY6V, anybody out there?
Sierra Zulu Lima.
Hey, David. Again, thank you. You know, there was one comment that I didn't make that there's so many interesting... I have been thinking about how to stop a hurricane ever since this last one went by me very close. And I decided the simplicity of all of this was to put a cork up the eye at the base of the hurricane. and stop it dead in its tracks. Well, the point is that Dorian was something like 23 or 24 miles in diameter. Can you imagine the size cork? And then the question is, how do you get it there? And better yet, how do you get it inserted? Go ahead, David. KY6V, over.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, drop it from one of those Hunter aircraft. Cork is not very heavy, is it? But if it's only 26 miles in diameter, then yeah, probably would be, have a bit of weight to it. Yeah, I was thinking when George LCB was mentioning about the birds. I don't know if the same's happening over in the US, but all our bees are sort of dying, and nobody knows why. I can't remember the percentages actually that was mentioned, but all the bees are sort of dying off, and even though they've done all the tests and whatever, they just can't seem to work out why they're actually dying. Go ahead, Gordon.
Oh, I hadn't heard that, David. That's very interesting. Is it an epidemic type thing? Do you think that this is virus prone? You know, it seems to me with, what do you want to blame it on, global warming or what, but your temperature range over there seems to have changed, in my opinion, drastically. Would that have any effect on the bees? Over.
Yeah, from GWHSNL. Yeah, it's very, very strange. They're only, like, you know, they've done tests on the dead ones, and they cannot find no viruses, no bacterial infections, anything at all, and they just seem to be dying off, and we just, nobody knows why. But and it's very, very disturbing, and we all are concerned about it because of, obviously they do the old pollen and all the rest of it, and it could have a dramatic effect on the planet. But we just don't know why yet. I'm keeping an eye on the stories, and but it seems to be getting happening a lot more. But as I said, nobody seems to know why at this time. From GWHSNL.
Is this geographically oriented? Like, is it in your European area, or is it worldwide? Over.
Yeah, it's European, but it's now got to this country as well, to the United Kingdom, a few years back. But nobody knows why it's actually happening. It reminds me of the Star Trek film. Was it The Voyage Home with the whales? Gordon, go ahead.
My goodness gracious. I'll have to look into that a little deeper. I hadn't heard about that. Well, thank you, David. Okay, anybody else out there for the good of the order, please? KY6V.
NO70, please.
Mr. Nottingham, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Gordon. With the recent passing of Chris Kraft, who was the flight director during the Apollo and moon landing times, and the tight ship that he ran, and we've been talking about satellite reconnaissance of hurricanes, direction, flow, prevention of losing lives, protection of property. Of course, he passed away recently. It's also close to the anniversary of the first moon landing. I just did want to take a moment to take note of Mr. Kraft's passing. His contribution, his intellectual rigor and discipline, his running a tight ship at NASA really has helped with the reliability of space flight launch and equipment and instrumentation and satellites even after his retirement, and will continue to do so after his passing. So, as we have talked about satellite reconnaissance of cyclonic weather systems and other weather systems, I did want to just to take occasion to take note of Mr. Chris Kraft's passing. Thank you, Gordon. KY6B, NO70.
Well, thank you for that, George, and I'm very happy that you brought that to all of our attention. How old was he, Was this of natural causes or what, sir?
I don't know his age. It was, to the best as I understand, natural causes. He, if I remember correctly, and in looking at historical films of the command center at the time of his being flight director inside the command center, I'm of the impression he was in his late 30s or early 40s at the most during the time he was acting as flight director, and that would have been in 69 through the mid 70s. So I think he did have a rather full life, but I don't know the answer to his age exactly or the cause, but I am very impressed that he only passed away recently. It was good to hear that he lived that long. KY6B on a 7-0.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a good tenure and certainly left his mark. Okay, thank you for that, George. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to wrap it here. Thanks for coming by for the hurricane science program this evening. We're going to turn the SCAR server back to normal use. And would like to say that general information about us at South SCARS can be found at scarsvoip.com on the website. That's scarsvoip.com. We'll do our best to get tonight's session put in podcast form and probably publish sometime tomorrow morning. I try to get it out before noon, but you never know. Sometime tomorrow is the way that we'll put it. Thanks, everybody. I enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. We'll see you downstream, as some people say, on the other downside of the coax. KY6V is now clear, and everything is back to normal operation. Bye-bye.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.